Blog Talk Radio.
You find out life's this game of inches. So is football. Because in either game, life or football, the margin for error is so small. I mean, one half a step too late or too early, and you don't quite make it. One half second too slow, too fast, you don't quite catch it. The inches we need are everywhere around us.
Hell yeah.
They're in every break of the game, every minute, every second. On this team, we fight for that inch. On this team, we tear ourselves and everyone else around us to pieces for that inch.
Absolutely. And, baby, I got to tell you, just ask the Green Bay Packers yesterday about the game of inches. Wow. Frat House might come back here to you this evening. And thanks again for joining us on another edition of Frat House Sports' Red Zone Blitz, one of our last remaining programs of this nature for this season coming up here. We've got just a couple more of these. And wow, what a week it has been right here on the Frat House Sports Radio Network, starting last Wednesday when we brought you last week's version of the Red Zone Blitz, and we're joined by, at that time, we were joined by our guest, Chad Jensen from Mile High Huddle, to talk about the situation with the Denver Broncos last Thursday. We were joined by Philip B. Wilson from Colts Blitz and Chris Semino from the Patriots Insider to talk about that game that we're going to be spending a lot of time talking about here this evening. And then yesterday we had our special conference championship program where we had our panel of six, including Jim Williams, Chris Franklin, Eric Purdy. Wow, what a week. And tonight it just continues as we will be joined here, in about 10, 15 minutes or so by a friend of ours from out there in Indianapolis, Kent Sterling from CBS Sports, 1430 AM, to talk about that game again. That Indianapolis Colts and New England Patriots game. But before we get to that, let me bring in my co-host, as always, who's been with me through all of this. Brandon, how we doing tonight?
Good. Ready to talk some football.
We're going to do that one tonight. And wow, what a week it has been right here on this network. We have had a lot of fun, and it's just going to continue as we go through things here. This evening and through this week, right through for the next 2 weeks as we work our way to, well, now we know what Super Bowl 49 is going to look like. We're going to have the New England Patriots and the Seattle Seahawks. Little bit surprised there, Brandon, or yes, no, maybe so, huh? What?
Well, I mean, going into it, I kind of had a feeling Green Bay was going to win and New England, and it was looking that way for about three quarters of the first game. But then, you know, things kind of changed in a hurry in that NFC game, and we end up with Seattle, and that's fine. Wow. I think it's going to be a good game. I think either matchup would have been good. I really don't think the Colts were quite ready for that stage. And they kind of showed it yesterday, and that's okay. But they're a good team. They're definitely an up and coming team. You know, they need to get a few more pieces on the offensive side of the ball. You know, but as far as the Seattle Seahawks, I mean, they are the defending champs, so you know that should make for a good game.
I've listened to a lot of sports talk radio today, and I've listened to it from from different parts of the country. And I'm going to be honest with you. everything I've heard, people are actually praising this upcoming Super Bowl. People are saying this is a good one. I mean, look, at least we've got, I guess what many people wanted to see was they wanted to see the Seattle Seahawks have to come back and defend that championship. I guess maybe that's what people wanted. I know, you know, many of us here at Frat House Sports yesterday, well, we were kind of rooting a little bit for that Green Bay Packers team to upset the Seattle Seahawks. But I guess the general sentiment is people are happy with the fact that it looks like Seattle's going to be defending, being forced to defend is basically what it comes down to. Would that, you think that might be what people are looking at?
I guess. I mean, the line opened, like a early line was 2.5, and I think it's already moved to a pick'em game. So
yeah,
I think that's kind of what people are liking about this. It's a very even matchup. You don't know who's going to win. This game should be. You know, you're talking about one of the best offenses in football against one of the best defenses in football. And, you know, even Seattle's offense isn't the greatest, but they're not totally horrible as we saw in the game yesterday. And the Patriots' defense is not on par with the Seahawks, but it's not bad either as we saw yesterday. So, you know, I think it's going to be a good matchup.
I do as well. I agree with you. I think either way it had gone, had it been New England – and Green Bay, New England, and Seattle, I think either way, I think we've got ourselves a good matchup. Let's start off because, and like I said, in a couple of moments, we're going to be joined here by Ken Sterling, and I had a chance to sit and listen to Ken's broadcast today from 1430 out in Indianapolis, and I already know he's going to be bringing us a little bit of a different twist on things from what people might be expecting. But anyhow, let's get into this game a little bit because at halftime, it certainly appeared that Indianapolis was in the game. I mean, they were only down by 10. New England had a 17-7 lead, but they never scored. Indianapolis never scored another point after that. And this ended up being a romp, 45-7. I asked a question on yesterday's, I don't want to call it a roundtable program because we have our semi-annual roundtable program coming up next week. But in our panel group that we had, our panel discussion that we had pregame, I asked the question, you know, is Indianapolis really the number two team in the AFC? I guess when you look at this kind of a score, you'd have to say, boy, they sure as hell weren't. I mean, is this an embarrassment for Indianapolis?
I'll be honest with you. I think the Ravens were probably the second best team in the AFC playoffs this year. I think if the Ravens played the Colts, the Ravens would beat them easily, and I think the Ravens would beat the Broncos right now. That's just the way it is. I mean, Peyton Manning's not, I think with a healthy Peyton Manning, the Broncos are clearly the number two. Maybe, you know, they give the Patriots a run for their money if he's 100% healthy, but, you know, certainly hasn't looked that way in a long time. So the Colts just look a couple steps behind. I think they got a good draw with the Bengals, and the Broncos and Colts, it's a good matchup for the Colts. The Colts' strengths play to the Broncos' defense real well, and I think that's why. I mean, the Broncos don't typically do that well against teams with good tight ends. I mean, New England kind of proved that earlier in the year, and San Diego gave them a couple runs for their money with their tight ends. And, you know, that's one of the strengths of the Colts right now is they actually have two good tight ends.
Yep.
So, you know, I think it played real well for the Colts to get the way they did. I mean, the Bengals, I think we have discussed ad nauseum.
Yep.
They're clearly, you know, they. I don't know how they got the record they had this year, but they were not a good team. And I think Baltimore, they just looked pretty good to me. I mean, they took care of Pittsburgh, and they took New England to the end. And, you know, I think they'd do the same against either of the other two, the Colts or the Broncos. So if you had to ask me, I think the second-best team in the AFC would have been the Ravens, but – you know, it didn't work out that way for them.
Interesting. Well, we could get into our conversations about, whether Joe Flacco is all that, but we could get into our, and we'll get into our conversations here momentarily about whether Andrew Luck is all that. Let me throw this one out to our audience real quick, because I failed to do so right there on the front end. If anybody wants to jump in with us during the time that we're on the air and join the program, bring your comments to the table. Please don't hesitate to do so. 347-826-9964. That's how you get to us via phone. 347-826-9964. If you're listening on a computer and you are Skype capable, hit the little Skype button next to our program, and that'll put get through to us loud and clear. And the chat room is wide open, and I see we have quite a few guests in there, and I appreciate that. Thank you all. Let's get into that conversation real quick before Kent joins us about Andrew Luck for a moment, because I'm on record as saying that I frankly think he's a bit overrated. I think he's been overrated. I said it yesterday on our pregame program. I think he's been overrated since he walked into the league. I'm not saying that at some point in the future, this guy might not turn into, I don't want to say a Tom Brady, but turn into one of the better quarterbacks in the NFL. But certainly yesterday didn't show that. 12 of 33, 126 yards, no touchdowns, two interceptions, 23.0 QB rating in an AFC conference championship game. I'm going to be honest with you. If I'm a Colts fan, I'm not happy with that kind of a performance. I don't care what the weather conditions were.
Well, you got to understand something. The Colts were going into New England, and Bill Belichick's constantly known for, putting pressure on younger quarterbacks. He's done it to Peyton Manning his entire career, whether he's younger or older. He might just have this team's number. I mean, as we talked about on the panel show the other day, I gave you some stats of the last four games they played, last three games prior to this game, and now you can add a fourth game. They've all been huge blowouts in favor of the Patriots. The Colts, they need to figure this out if they want to be competitive with the Patriots moving forward. It's just, they're a couple pieces away. They need a better running game, a more consistent running game. They could use a wide receiver or two. I think Reggie Wayne's might have just seen his last game, possibly in the league, in that AFC title game.
Right.
T.Y. Hilton's not a bad player, but he can't be by himself. They got some nice tight ends with Colby Fleener and Dwayne Allen, and I think Dwayne Allen's going to get better. And
yep.
Dwayne Allen could become, I'm not going to say Gronk like Gronkowski, but he could be in that, top three tight ends in the league kind of thing.
Yeah.
Because he's showing the ability. So, there's a lot to be positive about if you're a Colts fan. And I personally think Andrew Luck will become, in the category of Brady and Manning and Rodgers and Breeze. He'll be mentioned with those guys and not, the tier below. I think he's going to break through. I think you'll see him eventually get a Super Bowl win, once maybe, like I said, they need a little bit of help on offense. And, I'm not superly impressed with their defense, so they could be a year or two away. But I think they're fine in his progression. I mean, this is only his third full season, His fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, that's going to be his prime. Now, if they can get those couple issues resolved before you hit that point of his career, they're going to be in pretty good shape. I mean, to make things, I don't know if it's easier or not, but guys like Peyton Manning and Tom Brady will be retiring. I mean, they're not going to play forever. I mean,
well, no, obviously.
By the time, we're talking the prime time of Andrew Luck, three, four, five seasons down the road, we're certainly not going to see Manning, and Brady will probably be done by then as well.
Well, we're still.
I mean, Brady thinks he's going to play forever, but he's going to hit the same wall Peyton Manning hit at some point.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, we're even now still questioning, what the status still to this minute is going to be for Peyton Manning for next year, because nobody's 100% certain. Nobody's certain whether he's going to hang around with that Denver Broncos team or not. You've insinuated it that he may not be with the Denver Broncos next year. I've read other reports even today making the same exact insinuation that Well, he may not be there. But you're absolutely right. Andrew Luck might actually end up becoming an elite quarterback in this league almost by default. As some of these other guys start to step away.
That could very well be. I mean, you know, Andrew Luck has a very good skill set. You know what I mean? He has the tools in place. He just needs a lot better pieces around him. I mean, because let's face it, Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, Peyton Manning, none of them would do anything if they were playing with some of the guys that Andrew Luck is. I mean, Andrew Luck it was a huge blow when Ahmad Bradshaw went down because they actually had an semblance of a running game, and he actually can make some nice catches out of the backfield. He's a nice player on that team, and it really, really hurt them when they lost him. And for some reason, Trent Richardson lost his mind when Bradshaw went away because they weren't a bad 1-2 punch.
Right. All right, let me bring our guest in because I've been looking forward to this, and I've been trying to get Kent Sterling from CBS 1430 there in Indianapolis on with us for a while. And, boy, the timing couldn't have been better. Kent, thanks so much for joining us tonight. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. My pleasure, Michael.
You know, it's funny. We're just sitting here talking a little bit about this game yesterday, obviously. You've got I heard your program this afternoon, so I'm loaded. You took a little bit of a different spin on it. We're sitting here. We're talking about the performance of Andrew Luck, not just Luck, but obviously the entire Colts. Talk to me about the fan base for a moment right now, because, I've read some stories. Well, some are saying, hey, this is a good thing for Indianapolis. Brandon's kind of echoing that. Hey, the kind of stepping stone sort of thing. You took a slightly different tone to that on your program today.
Yeah, I think it's a failure. Because it's not like the Colts got out-schemed. It's not like the Colts were out performed. They were just beaten, and they were beaten at the line of scrimmage. They were dominated at the line of scrimmage. They didn't adapt to what they were being attacked with because they were getting moved off the ball, and that's unacceptable. You know, if you're going to build a football team, you got to build toughness first, and that team yesterday wasn't very tough. And so it's back to the drawing board for the coaches. It's back to the drawing board for Ryan Grigson, Jim Irsay, and the players have got to take a good long look in the mirror at themselves. The city of Indianapolis is a really nice city. People are nice here. They're pleasant. They're accommodating. So when the Colts can, you know, they stand behind a podium and they say, look, we took a step forward. You know what? No, you didn't take a step forward. You didn't take advantage of an opportunity that you had in front of you because you didn't play tough enough.
Are you finding that your sentiment there is a little bit out of whack, perhaps, maybe, with the fan base? Because I got to be honest with you. I'm from Philadelphia. We went 4-12 under the last year with Andy Reid three seasons ago. And under our new coach, 10-6, we're not a happy bunch here. And I'm going to tell you right now, if Indianapolis were in my town in Philadelphia, we're not a happy bunch. Is your sentiment a little out of whack, perhaps, maybe, with the fan base?
You know what? I think that it is among some of them. But I think it's time that the city of Indianapolis kind of move it toward the kind of caliber of city that holds its teams responsible rather than just cheering blindly as failure comes year after year after year after year. Whether they're ahead of schedule or behind schedule in this rebuilding, you know what? They've got one of the best young quarterbacks in football, and it's time for them to stop making excuses and to start saying, hey, we lost, but. I don't like we lost, but. You know, I like, hey, we won. Here's how we're moving forward to win again. Or we lost, and we're not tough enough, and so we're going to get tough guys, and we're going to build this thing right.
I asked a question on a pregame panel program that we did yesterday. It was a special program that we did just on Sunday. We had about six people on our panel on that program. I asked a question, and I throw it to you. Is this a situation where the Colts were just – hey, they're just not the caliber of the New England Patriots. In other words, I asked the question yesterday, were the Colts the number two team in the AFC?
I think they are the number two team in the AFC. But that's because of the way they match up against everybody else. The way they match up with the Patriots, they're a distant second. you know, the Ravens match up really well with the Patriots. The Colts match up well with the Ravens. I'm really confident that if the Ravens had held on last weekend, the Colts would be going to the Super Bowl. The Achilles heel for the Indianapolis Colts is attacked with precision by Bill Belichick and by the New England Patriots. They know how to beat this team, and until the Indianapolis – and it's the same thing that Manning went through and the Colts went through 10 years ago with the Patriots. Until they solve that riddle, they are, you know, they're going to be holding Belichick's purse as he goes off to Super Bowl after Super Bowl unless somebody else takes them out.
Mm-hmm. Brandon brought up the point, and let me ask you if this works into any of the scheme of it. This is a team that, listen, it's missing a lot of weapons. You talked a little bit today on your program, and I'm going to ask you about it. You talked a little bit about Trent Richardson. What? Let's talk
right.
about the ground game. Let's talk about the ground game in total. This is an Indianapolis team without a ground game. Let's get it straight. And as far as the wide receiving core, well, look, Reggie Wayne, come on. Take him out of the mix. He's over with. You've got T.Y. Hilton. That's about it. Kobe Fleener's a nice-looking player.
That's about right. And I think that the critical error that was made, Ryan Grigson as the GM has done a whole lot of good things. But one of the really, really bad things he did is he put the cart before the horse. And he went out and traded a first-round draft pick for Trent Richardson. He didn't need a running back. He needed an offensive line. That's how you run the football with a dominant offensive line. Look at what the Dallas Cowboys have done. DeMarco Murray's a nice player. But the reason that they're able to gain so many yards rushing the football is because of that offensive line. Indianapolis could have used that first-round pick to go get an offensive lineman. They did the right thing in taking Jack Muhort in this draft in the second round. They need offensive linemen. They didn't need Trent Richardson.
Talk about Trent Richardson. You seem to be giving him a little, well, as you said, all afternoon, the benefit of the doubt, huh?
Well, I don't know what the deal is. There's every chance that he was at the hospital, that he's suffering some kind of family crisis. He's a really nice guy, and he's a good teammate. The Colts, to a man, speak exceptionally highly of Trent Richardson. It's really hard for me to believe that he just abandoned ship. So in that regard, I give him the benefit of the doubt. As far as his ability to run or inability to run the football, a lot of guys on the Colts will tell you off the record that he's overweight and he doesn't get to the hole on time because he's too heavy. And mm-hmm. and for that reason, on the field, his productivity, I don't give him a pass. But missing the game this Sunday, until we know what happened, I'm going to take him at his word.
All right. Is there anything positive to take out of yesterday's game?
Well, you know what? Playing Bill Belichick is a really good thing for a team with warts because Bill Belichick is going to find those warts and he's going to expose them. And now Ryan Grigson and Chuck Pagano and Jim Irsay and everybody else involved with that organization know exactly where they're weak. And so they're going to be able to go through free agency. They're going to be able to prepare for the NFL draft, knowing exactly what they have to do to get better. And that's thanks to Belichick. And that's kind of what happened 10 years ago as the Indianapolis Colts were being built by Bill Polian. Over and over and over again, they were exposed by Belichick and the Patriots. And so they drafted, they signed free agents, and they got the team that was necessary in order to vanquish that foe. You know, you brought up the weakness of the wide receivers. Dante Moncrief is a pretty good guy, but you guys know that wide receivers take a little bit of time to develop. T.Y. Hilton was a bit of a freak in that he came on very quickly. Dante Moncrief was a good get in the third round by Ryan Grigson and the Colts. Dwayne Allen, Kobe Fleener, good components. Hakeem Nicks underperformed compared to what they thought they were going to get. Reggie Wayne, Father Time finally caught up with him. So they do need to get another exterior weapon. But with Moncrief and Hilton as bookends, they're going to be okay.
Hey, Kent, this is Brandon. I have a question for you. As you just pointed out, you have quite a few pieces to build on, and they're all in their third year. You got Andrew Luck, T.Y. Hilton, Fleener, Allen, and Jarrell Freeman on defense. Looks like an awesome, you know, middle or outside linebacker to build around. I think there's some things to be positive about. I mean, yes, you're right. They do have some weaknesses. the first thing they should do is show Josh Cribbs the door, because he's been horrible in all the last games. He makes super poor decisions of when to run the ball out, when not to run the ball out, when to try to not call for fair catch. For a premier, you know, return guy in the NFL who's had so many touchdowns, he just looked terrible for the Colts, which explains why he was probably on the shelf all year.
Build a championship football team, grabbing castoffs from the Cleveland Browns probably right. Not a high way to go about doing.
Very good.
But you do
but
have a
right.
lot of early players, you know, early, you know, third year guys who, you know, they're just ready to come into their own. So, I mean,
there's
got to be a good outlet.
Terrell Freeman's the guy who came from the CFL. So he's 28, 29 years old, early to the NFL, but he's kind of at a late stage in his football career. He's got a few more years ahead of him, though. You're right. The linebackers are okay. The cornerbacks, really, really good. I'd stack up Darius Butler, Vontae Davis, and Greg Toler against any set of three cornerbacks in the NFL. One of the things that was unforeseeable was that Robert Mathis wound up being suspended for the first four games of the season, and as he's working out, tears his Achilles. With Robert Mathis, that's a different defense. They're getting to the quarterback much more often, you know, much more frequently, and so that becomes a different defense. But they need somebody who can get to the quarterback, and then they need a strong safety who's willing to play every single down. Laron Landry, frankly, a disappointment this season most of the time.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I would have expected a little more out of him. He's not that old, but he is. I guess he is old, but he's not old. I mean, you see a guy who's 30 years old, you'd think he would be, you know, still have a few good years left in him, but he doesn't. I don't know. It didn't look like he should have been playing the way he was this year.
Against the Broncos, he was pretty good. He blew a couple of coverages and then missed that tackle fourth and one that drove people here nuts. But other than those three plays, he was really pretty sound. He can be. And this is me from the outside looking in. He can be a little bit emotionally weak. He can be a guy who, when things are going downhill, he just kind of pursues the ball without a great deal of enthusiasm and doesn't look to make plays in the same way he does when he's fully engaged in the game. You know, he takes plays off, especially when the chips are down, and you can't have a guy like that on the field if you're going to play at a championship level.
Yeah, I think you were probably look for a little bit more run support out of him as well. I mean, clearly yesterday the Patriots, while they've done it against the Colts the last several times they've played, they just pound somebody at them. And it just depends whoever happens to be up, I guess, this for them. I mean, LeGarrette Blount did it in last year's playoffs, but then we had Jonas Gray make the one game in the middle there, which, you know, we've not heard from him since. It seems like the safety should be, you know, helping a little bit more in the run game.
No question about it. And because he doesn't, then you have to cheat different guys and you wind up being exposed like the Colts were yesterday. You know, how many times did the Patriots run that little rub routes where they got the tight end flaring out and they got Edelman set wide coming underneath? So he beats the press coverage. How many times did that? I mean, it seemed like every time they were third and six, third and eight, they ran that play. It worked, and they moved the chains.
Right.
Yeah. It seemed like they didn't adapt well at all, especially coming out on the third quarter. I mean, the third quarter was just a nightmare. And
well,
let me
ask though, Brandon, because you're bringing up an interesting, flaw. And let me ask Kent: is that a coaching issue?
I think that the Colts have some coaching issues. But, you know, you look at the game against the Bengals and the Colts were dominant. You look at the game against the Broncos, the Colts were dominant. It's the same set of coaches. And in figuring out what in the world happened yesterday, I think that that's going to take some in-depth study that frankly, I haven't gone to the lengths to do. But I think everybody's culpable. For a game like yesterday, 45-7 doesn't happen with a great head coach. You know, I think that Belichick outcoached Pagano. You know, I think Josh McDaniels outcoached Greg Minuski. And then on the other side, the Patriots DC, he outcoached Pep Hamilton. I don't think anybody's, non-culpable in this mess.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think we've seen all season, at least from Belichick and the staff, is they make their most hay in the third quarter. I don't know what they do at halftime that's different from other coaching staffs, but they always seem to – granted, they try to always get the second half kickoff. If they win the toss, they always defer, and they always – you know, if the other team takes the ball first, they have no issue with that. They like having the ball coming out of the third quarter. But it seems like – that's their strength. They always come out in the third quarter and start putting it to a team, and the Colts just totally looked unprepared, like they didn't change anything.
They're not alone in that. Patriots, since the regular season game against the Colts, they've allowed one touchdown in the second half, and that was to the Ravens a week and a couple of days ago, 9 days ago. You know, they beat teams in the second half, and that had been kind of the calling card of the Colts. I think they had given up a total of 3 points in the second half of the two previous playoff wins. And Pep Hamilton throughout the season, I gave him high marks throughout the season for the way he adapted at halftime and the way he adjusted and kind of employed a secondary game plan. And that just wasn't – that didn't – it looked like it came to fruition yesterday at all.
I'm on record here for, I guess, the good part of 3 years now here at Frat House Sports. I'm not real high on Andrew Luck and never have been. I've always kind of felt that he's a bit overrated. I thought he was overrated coming out of the draft. And one of my biggest complaints about him has been the interception issue. From your perspective, somebody that follows the Colts as closely as you do, give me a grade for Andrew Luck for this year and then cumulatively for his 3 years.
You know, I got to tell you the truth. I think he's a spectacularly talented guy with a head for the game that is almost unparalleled. His intellect, his attitude, his leadership, his ability to move in the pocket, his ability to read defenses, really, really strong. He can make throws. The one thing that I think that he does a little bit is he tends to push the ball a little bit, and he can get under a throw, so they arrive high. But he's got receivers. A lot of those interceptions, like the two against Denver, those were de facto punts. You know, those were, hey, we've got third and unmanageable, so let's throw the ball up and see what happens.
Right.
And, you know, if you come down with it, you win. And if they come down with it, that's what McAfee would have done with a punt, so you're okay. You know, a lot of interceptions come on tipped balls. And he is he's very critical of himself, but he forgets quickly too. He understands when he's made a mistake, he admits the mistake, and he tries to learn from it. He's a great guy in the community. This is a guy who really, to me, represents all the positive qualities you would ever want in a quarterback. I mean, you can take the greats of the game. I mean, he kind of runs like Staubach. He's kind of got the calm of an Aaron Rodgers. He's got the intellect of a Manning. He's got a gun for an arm. You know, he's kind of like Roethlisberger in the pocket. He just does so many things well. And plus, like I went out to camp, and all I did at camp is I stared at him and I watched his behavior throughout workout after workout after workout, and he never dropped enthusiasm. He was never non-supportive. He was never mopey like a Jay Cutler. He was just on it all the time, prodding guys and encouraging guys. He is just I think he's a preeminent leader with the physical gifts to be the absolute best in the NFL.
All right. Well, you've made me a believer.
I'll be honest with you, Ken. I kind of agree with you a lot. The only thing sometimes that bothers me is his decision-making. It just doesn't seem like – I don't know. Maybe the heads. Maybe he's overthinking stuff sometimes, and so he should just play the game more. But it seems like, you know, every once in a while he gets in these, like you said, he tries to force it, or he tries to force it to a guy, and ends up making a costly turnover. And now, granted, you're right. The two against Denver, they were more or less, like you said, a glorified punt. But yesterday's turnovers, they weren't the same kind of thing. And you know, it's that. Decision making a little bit, in my opinion. I think he's
You're right. But it's his third year, and really, it took Manning until 2004 to become the quarterback he was, and that was year seven for Manning. Right. So right. So yeah. I think that, you know, people who expect, and I'm not saying you guys do, but people here, they kind of expect that Peyton Manning-esque sort of field generalship of the game. And Luck's not there yet. I think he's going to get there because I don't think anybody works harder than he does.
No, I agree with you. And by his seventh year, he should be the best quarterback in the game. I mean, because guys like Manning and Brady and Breeze are probably going to be gone. Rodgers will be at the end. He should still be in, but he'll be towards the end. So you're going to, you know, Andrew Luck's going to be it. I mean, you're going to have Andrew Luck and Joe Flacco and, you know, guys in that era, the ones going for the AFC Championship game and or the Super Bowl.
Kent,
you're exactly right.
Kent, you didn't spend much time on it today on the program, and I was a little bit curious why, because I thought perhaps maybe there would be some chat of it. It was brought to my attention late last evening on one of the many, many NFL groups that I'm affiliated with over on Facebook, and I just put out a comment going, oh, please, just stop already. And that's what's being now being called Inflategate. now, mind you, it was my team, the Philadelphia Eagles, that were the victims of quote-unquote Spygate, and yet I have never, ever given Spygate any credence or credibility whatsoever. When this story broke late last night that the NFL was investigating the New England Patriots for underinflated balls, I was kind of a little surprised. It didn't come up much today on the program.
Well, it wasn't the reason that they lost. Even if Belichick did cheat, and who doesn't believe that he might have done exactly what he's being accused of? But, you know, inflated balls, flat balls, overinflated balls, the Patriots were going to win that game last night regardless. But what a Belichickian thing to do, you know, to figure out how in the wet and the cold to give yourself just a little bit of an advantage by underinflating the balls or, you know, releasing some of the pressure. The team that this is brought to a 12-year-old brought this, you know, to me during the show is it's not the Colts who might want to go over videotape and figure out what was going on last night. It's the Ravens, because if he did that against the Colts, you can bet he did that against the Ravens, and against the Ravens, that might have made a big difference.
Wow.
Wouldn't the Colts be playing with the same balls, though? I mean, even if the balls – no, they play with different...
Each team brings – I think each team brings, like, 18 and something like that. And then they're inspected 2 hours and 15 minutes before the game. 12 go to one sideline, 12 go to the other sideline, and they've got 6 to replace any of the – 24 that go south. But those the balls that the Patriots use come from the Patriots sideline. The balls that the Colts use offensively come from the Colts sideline. So there's an opportunity for somebody from the Patriots to release a little bit of air to those footballs on the Patriots sideline, and then the Colts are playing with, you know, the properly inflated balls. That could actually happen.
Wow.
I
thought there was no chance to do that after they turned the balls over. So maybe I didn't read that right.
And I think you said on today's program, Kent, what, the PSI on that is what, like 12, 13?
Yeah, I think it's either 11.5 to 12.5 or 12.5 to 13.5. And the guy who broke that story is Bob Kravitz from WTHR.com. He used to work for the Indianapolis Star. And Bob's rock solid. I hired Bob as a radio host. And for him to make that kind of accusation, somebody from the league went on, you know, at least background with him, and I'm sure he got a second source. He is journalistically as solid as it gets.
I mean, seriously, I mean, this could have, I mean, if it turns out to be anything real here, apparently the penalty would be that the Patriots could lose a draft pick or two. I mean, this is, believe it or not, what I find rather interesting is everybody that I have heard on talk radio today, it doesn't matter whether it's been from Indianapolis or other places that I've listened around the country today, have been somewhat kind of dismissive, all saying, hey, well, that's Belichick, you know, hell, you know.
Right.
We all just sit back and go, oh, what, like, be surprised?
I mean,
you know what? I think the NFL ought to run him for a year. I think the NFL ought to suspend him for a year. He has shown such reckless disregard for the rules and tried to gain so many advantages in really surreptitious methods that I don't think he's good for the game. If this proves to be true, I'd sit him for a while, and I'd try to bring to bear a consequence that got his attention and the attention of Bob Kraft.
Wow. Okay. Well, hey, folks, you heard that on Frat House Sports. You know, there's a reason to be listening right here. I like that. Didn't hear that today over on 1430.
No, well, you know what? We got to fix the Colts problems first.
I hear you. Before we let you out the door, I got to ask you there might be two, actually, but I got to ask you one quick question because I know – actually, I got introduced to you through your previous affiliation with 101 up in St. Louis.
Yep.
And we've been covering the situation, well, we've been talking about it a lot, because one of our regular members right here from Frat House Sports is a St. Louis native. We've been talking a lot about the situation with the potential of St. Louis moving to Los Angeles. What's your read, if anything, on how this is going to go? Apparently, at this particular time right now, the Rams still have a January 28 date looming where they could potentially accept a proposal from the city. Do you have any feelers out on this one?
I would be really surprised if they don't wind up moving. I think they're gone. St. Louis is a dysfunctional city. You know, coming from Indianapolis, like, I'll get into a little bit of the governmental setup here. This is the state capital. It's also the city where the team calls home. The county and the city are the same. They're run by the same government. In St. Louis, you have St. Louis City, St. Louis County, and then about 100 different municipalities that surround St. Louis City but are within St. Louis County. So being able to pass like a bond issue or a tax referendum, you know, that like an entertainment tax, as Indianapolis did in order to fund Lucas Oil Stadium, it's much more difficult in Missouri. You know, Missouri's state capital is Jefferson City, and that's in the middle of the state, so Jay Nixon's out there, and Francis Slay, the mayor of St. Louis, he's over here. And then you've got a whole different state that's a part of the kind of the metroplex of St. Louis. Right across the river is Illinois. So getting money from the Illinois side of the river is virtually impossible. Mm-hmm. And so it's just very, very complicated to be able to put together the kind of money that St. Louis needs. And it's kind of a depressed city. You know, businesses close more often than open downtown.
Right.
And so it's difficult for a city like that to be able to fund, a $900 million to $1.1 billion stadium. And that's what it's going to take to make Stan Kroenke happy. And Kroenke's already got he's got the land adjacent to Hollywood Park. He's got a consortium put together to build a stadium, and I think that getting all the players together at a table to sing from the same hymnal, if anybody can do it, it's Dave Peacock. And Dave Peacock is kind of the civic champion who's trying to put this thing together. He used to run Anheuser-Busch, and he's that guy who can kind of be what Jeff Smullyan was with the Indianapolis Colts and the city of Indianapolis, doing the late night calls and trying to be an ambassador of goodwill and keeping the lines of communication open. If Dave Peacock can't do it, nobody can. And I think in this case, I think nobody can.
I have a question for you, though. Do you think Kroenke's ready to do it against the NFL's wishes or blessing? I mean, because everything I'm reading, he's not going to get, especially if St. Louis can put together some kind of proposal. He's not going to get the votes he needs. Plus, he could be facing some kind of court lawsuit from the Chargers blocking him. So I'm kind of curious, would he be brazen enough to do it without league approval?
I don't think he could. You know, he's got to get an up or down vote from and
24 owners. Down.
Yeah, I think it's three-quarters. You're right. Yeah, three-quarters, 75%.
Yeah, he needs 24 yeses to do it.
But he isn't going to – if he doesn't have the votes, he won't do it. But I think it's going to be really interesting. I think that the NFL, you know, they get a lot of money from expansion fees. The owners just get a big giant check for expansion fees. So maybe moving franchises into Los Angeles isn't their first, you know, the first thing that they'd like to see happen. But I would be really surprised if Kroenke doesn't get his way. He's a really, really good businessman. He understands how things work, or how it works. And I would be really surprised if by the beginning of 2016 that at least one team isn't in L.A. And I think the Rams are a likely target. Maybe it's the Rams and the Chargers. Maybe it's the Rams and the Raiders. But I think the Rams are going.
With all due respect to any kind of friends I might have in Atlanta, St. Louis is in Atlanta. St. Louis is a team, or is a city, that I find generally does support their teams. If, in fact, St. Louis were to lose the Rams, will they get another NFL team?
Well, there's been talk, although the lease situation in Jacksonville is pretty restrictive, but Shad Khan bought the Jacksonville Jaguars. He's a Central Illinois guy. He's got St. Louis roots. He used to be a minority owner with the Rams. And the thought was by a lot of people in St. Louis that Kroenke was going to move the Rams to L.A. and Shad Khan was going to find a way to move the Jacksonville Jaguars to St. Louis. But the lease language, it's so restrictive. The penalty would be so severe for Jacksonville to up and move that I don't know if that can possibly happen.
Well, we've always joked that they were going to be the London Jaguars, but, you know, we don't know.
That could happen, too. although, you know what? That's a goofy – because I was in London for one of these American Bowl deals with the Rams, and they those people, they go to Wembley Stadium, but they do not know football at all. And I think that if it weren't a novelty, if it was an every-week deal, I think it would be very difficult. And I think the travel on the other end for a team – you know, if you locate a team in London, that flight is a haul.
Oh, I agree.
If they have to fly, you know, as far as Chicago and to the west, that is a horrific disadvantage for a team that would be located in London.
Well, with all due respect, all of us here at Frat House Sports have called the whole concept poppycock. Ken, I was going to call a violation on you right from the very beginning of the program when you indicated that you were timing out of the Indianapolis Colts game yesterday for a movie. But then you mentioned that the movie was To Kill a Mockingbird, and I gave you a pass.
There you go. And it was only during the commercials, and I have a great internal clock. When I click, my wife and my son know that we'll be back to the show as they return from commercial breaks. And it happened almost without fail yesterday, so I didn't miss a single play. But we did watch Atticus and Scout
Absolutely.
And everybody, you know, kind of explore racial tension in the South in, you know, that in the great 1962 movie.
Great movie. Fabulous movie. I think it was it an Academy Award winner? I believe it might have been.
I believe it was. And it was
Absolutely
the only book that Harper Lee wrote, and that's too bad.
That's correct.
Because it's a great book and a great movie.
That's correct. Kent, it has been a real, real pleasure. Let our audience please know how they can catch up with you and how they can catch up with 1430.
Well, it's CBS Sports 1430 in Indianapolis. So if you've got the TuneIn app, you just look at Indianapolis radio stations, and it's there. And we're on from 3 to 6 every day. You can go to KentSterling.com and on Twitter, at Kent Sterling. It's all Kent Sterling all the time.
Now, you got to love that. And for anybody out there, listen, I'm from Philadelphia, and I listened to 1430 all afternoon to hear Kent. You can get it right on your computer and stream it. So no problem. Absolutely a breeze.
Well, I hope you enjoyed it.
I did, actually. I absolutely did. Listen, I love the bit about To Kill a Mockingbird, and your Kate Upton conversations were quite enjoyable.
Perfect. Well, thanks for having me on, guys. I really had a good time.
You got it. And listen, I'd like to get you back maybe during March Madness time. We'll talk a little Hoosiers.
Love to. The Final Four, it's right here this year. So absolutely
I know
up
it
our
is.
Alley.
Yep, I know it is. All right, wonderful.
Thank you, Kent.
Absolutely.
Take care. Oh, good stuff. Good stuff. Appreciate Kent being on with us this evening. And we got the lowdown right there from Indianapolis. Interesting twist there. Brandon. I had a feeling it was going to be a little bit different from what most people kind of expected because, you know, I heard the same sorts of things from a lot of other people. You kind of echoed it a little bit. Hey, you know, the Colts are not a bad team. They're moving up. I mean, I think every year they've taken one step further, right? I mean, because 2 years ago it was the wild card, and then last year it was the divisional, and this year it's the AFC Championship. When I'm here in Kent today going on and saying, I'm not happy with this. I'm sitting there going, oh, man, this guy ought to be a Philadelphian.
there's two ways to look at it. I mean, when you're that close to the big game, yeah, you want to see your team make that final step. I can understand it. But at the same time, when and he even more or less said the same thing, there's a lot of good things about the Colts team right now. They just need to fix a lot. You know, they have a lot to work on. I mean, after hearing him, I wouldn't be surprised to hear some coaching changes. I mean, maybe even some coordinator changes. Yeah. You know, Pagano, when he was out sick, had Bruce Arians as his offensive coordinator step in. And clearly, you know, he was a very good coach. He's doing very well for Arizona. So maybe he needs to, you know, get a little stronger coordinator in there for one side or the other. I mean, you know, take an ex-head coach who's better as a coordinator, you know, maybe a solid defensive guy or something, you know, and do that. I don't, you know, it's hard to say when you're one game away from the Super Bowl that you're going to start replacing coaches, but, you know, maybe it did point out something, you know, a need.
Absolutely. All right. For all of you that are out there listening, please, if you'd like to jump in with us here at Frat House Sports on our Red Zone Blitz program, please don't hesitate to do so. 347-826-9964. 347-826-9964. Excuse me, or Skype in with us if you are listening via computer and you're Skype capable. And the chat room right there. It looks like I missed a couple of chats from Uncle Mark there. Boy, I'll skim through those here in a moment. Sorry about that. But let's get over to the other game that was played yesterday, Brandon. And both games, in some respects, actually, though, before I jump into it, because I asked, let me ask you real quick before I jump into the NFC game. I asked Ken about it. I didn't get your read on it. I have a funny feeling I know where you're going to go with it. This newest allegation against the New England Patriots. You probably haven't had enough time just yet to really do a lot of research or reading on it, but what's your initial read on it?
Well, I wish the NFL would be more decisive and just say, hey, the balls were good or they're not. I mean, this is stupid. All they got to do is put a pressure gauge on them and say, yeah, there's a problem, or no, there wasn't. I mean, we need to do a thorough investigation, and we need to do this, and we'll deal with this in the offseason. That's bull. Just call it what it is, because I think it's stupid personally. You know, everybody always talks about Spygate and Belichick, and clearly I'm a Patriots fan, so I'm going to be a little tainted, but Bill Belichick has had a higher winning percentage cumulatively since Spygate and moving forward. So I think this is dumb. I mean, if the ball pressures were off, just say it. Say, okay, yeah, hey, we found some irregularities. They were off by, you know, half a pound or whatever. I mean, even Kent brought up, and I read the same thing, I think they have a pound leeway. It can be anywhere from 12.5 to 13.5. All right. Were they down or not? Why don't you just answer the question? That's all. I mean, why do we got to have a big investigation? And, I mean, it's, you know, it is what it is. I don't understand. There's very little information out there about it.
Well, I realize. And conspiracy theorists, however, might argue with you that, well, the reason that the NFL is saying that is because, well, isn't this typical of the NFL, where basically perhaps maybe what they want to do is just shove it under the carpet? You know, the relationship between Bob Kraft and Roger Goodell, maybe that's what this is all part and parcel of.
There's an easy way to do that. Just say the balls were fine. Who's going to argue with them? I mean, the NFL took a few balls with them to be tested. I mean, who's really going to know what the results are? I mean, ultimately, if there is some kind of conspiracy theory thing going on, then that's what the answer is going to be. Why do we have to prolong it? I think this whole thing becoming that it has its own name of Inflategate is just dumb.
Oh, well, I use that almost jokingly.
Well, no,
it's
not just you. Yeah. It's everywhere. Oh, no. Yeah. I'm not. That wasn't directed at you. That's a name that everybody universally is using, you know, about it like it's some big thing. But it is what it is. I mean, if there's a problem, say it. Why do we have to have an investigation about it? It's dumb. The NFL, you know, has, you know, all this timeline about the balls. Then don't ever let the teams have any of their employees involved that can manipulate the balls.
I would agree. It would seem to me
stupid. It would seem to be having a conversation about.
Easy enough to sequester the balls. Oops.
Yeah.
Seriously.
I mean, seriously,
it would be easy enough to do that. I mean, you know, for God's sake, I don't know why this would be an issue. I agree with you. And that's why when I'm reading it late last night in some of the, like I said, some of the groups, and that's where I was first alerted to it, I'm going in, I'm going, oh, come on, please. This is nonsense. I don't even want to hear about it.
Okay, if you want to compare the two, compare this to Spygate. You're talking about a whole different situation.
I don't want to because you know where I stand on Spygate.
Well, yeah, I know. But, I mean, at least that's something tangible. I mean, you're going to have video evidence. You're going to have, you know, you're going to have to investigate, you know, when, you know, look at the video, see what they were doing, see what was shot, see if anything, you know, untoward happened. This is like NASCAR investigating a car. Was it the right height or wasn't it? Is the ball the right pound, you know, right range air pressure or not?
It's black and white. It's black and white. There's no gray.
This is stupid that it has to go on like this. Oh,
right,
we're going to take
the
balls to a secret location and test them. Oh, come on. I'll give you some balls to test. This is stupid. I mean, seriously. It just bugs me because it's not – it's almost like the media is trying to paint the Patriots the villain again.
I agree with you. I agree
but
with
it's
you.
Like, okay, if something's wrong, you know, maybe they need to change the process then. Make sure that only the referees touch the ball, you know, instead of these ball handlers on the side. What's the point of having the balls turned over to the referees 2.5 hours prior to the game just to give them back to the ball handler? I don't understand. What's the mechanics of this process to me is dumb. Even the whole thing with the kicking ball I think is dumb, that they have to have designated balls to kick that don't get rubbed in as hard. I mean, come on. Are you kidding me?
We heard that one last night. Which game?
Yeah.
We spotted a
kicking ball. We can't possibly play with a kicking ball. I'm like, are you kidding me? I mean, you make it sad. On top of it, the ball's soaking wet. All the balls were soaking wet. They were probably hard as a rock. So the inflation probably meant nothing. I mean, when it comes right down to it, I mean, you're playing in 50-degree rainy weather. That ball's got to feel like a rock coming to the receivers. It's got to be heavy because it's soaking wet. And, you know, I don't think the air pressure in the ball really would matter to begin with, to be quite honest.
I have a funny feeling that there's going to be a short clip about Inflategate and sequestered balls. Sequestered balls on our Frat House Saturday program.
Well, there might be. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to get so heated. But to me, it's like there's got to be more important things to talk about than the air pressure in the balls. I mean, come on.
Folks. Give us a holler, 347-826-9964. We're talking about the air and the balls. Oh, my goodness. Too much fun. We have had too much fun here this week on the Frat House Sports Radio Network. Let's get over and talk about the NFC Championship game. Holy smokes, what in the hell happened? We watched two different games yesterday afternoon. Seattle won this game 28-22. There's no way in hell, in my opinion, they should have. No, they shouldn't have. Absolutely not. Green Bay was winning this game 16-0. This was a team, by the way, that was, what? They were the underdogs by 6.5 points going into the game. 6.5, I believe it was.
Yep.
They seemingly – Brandon seemingly doing everything right. Listen, it wasn't a situation where Green Bay was winning because the Seattle Seahawks were playing poorly. This was a situation where Green Bay was winning because Green Bay was beating them. They were beating them. They were beating them on both sides of the ball. And it was really, well, I got to tell you, for many of us here at Frat House Sports, we were sitting back. We were a little bit shocked. Our eyes are wide open. We're going, holy smokes, what is going on here? And for quite a little while there, there were a lot of us that were, well, we had our hopes buoyed. Suddenly it might have been Green Bay going to the Super Bowl. Not so fast. Seattle came back in the second half, and my goodness gracious, at the very end of it, 28-22. But you know something, Brandon, I think this really came down to, and I've said I've listened to sports radio today here, you know, from different sections of the country, and obviously I was listening in on Indianapolis. Tomorrow, I may have to tune into Green Bay because I'd like to hear what's going on with the Green Bay fan base, because I would think there are a lot of people right now that are not too happy with Mike McCarthy.
Well, hey, they should be talking about balls too, just not the footballs on the field. They should be talking about McCarthy's balls because he had none in that game. That's the long and short of it. Mike McCarthy took his foot off the gas and decided, I'm going to play safe football. And safe football means you're going to be watching the game from your living room instead of on the sidelines in 2 weeks, because they should not have lost this game. They outplayed Seattle. There was an interesting thing. I don't know how accurate it is, but apparently somebody had a computer model that at one point during the fourth quarter gave Seattle Seahawks not 1%, 0.1% chance of winning the game. In other words, they had 0.1% chance of winning the game, and they won the game.
Wow.
That's unbelievable to think that a team could come back from odds that short to win. And I think all of us said the same thing yesterday as we're watching it. Yeah, there's no way. I mean, that's not going to happen. But from the minute the last interception, the Green Bay Packer intercepted the ball and took a knee immediately, I'm thinking to myself, why? Why are you taking a knee? Why aren't you – you need more points to put this game away. And it just – I don't like the way they played any part of the middle of the third quarter on. Mike McCarthy decided he was going to try to play safe football, and it wasn't safe. And it was just stupid football because they lost a game they had no business to lose. I'm not calling the beat for him to be fired because he's a great coach. He's won a Super Bowl. But he seriously needs to look at – the way he calls football games as a head coach moving forward. I mean, you can't do what you did in that game. I mean, after that interception, they ran three runs into the line and punted immediately. He might have burned a minute and a half off the clock. What good does that serve? That served no purpose whatsoever in the flow of the game. It was just, you know, inexcusable. And even at the end, when they drove on that last drive, I read a story that technically the Seahawks should have been penalized for Marshawn Lynch's taunting, his crotch grab at the end of the game towards directed directly at the Green Bay bench. You know, they should have had a kickoff from the 20 field position. Even without that, once they got into field goal range, they just started to cruise and they weren't going to try to go any further. If they'd have had the benefit of, you know, the Seahawks kicking off from the 20 and say started somewhere around their own, you know, 35-40, you have to make a case to try to win the game, not just kick a field goal to tie it. I mean, why risk overtime when you don't have to? I think I just don't like the uninspired, you know, you're building a losing mentality among your team by not going after points there. I just don't like it one bit.
The I think where it became most apparent to me, and I know that you go back and you talk about, you know, that you didn't like the way the whole game plan was from about the middle of the third quarter on, but where it became most apparent to me was in the fourth quarter with 5 minutes remaining. Green Bay's up 19 to 7, and Green Bay gets the ball. And what do? They go three and out, running the ball three times to Eddie Lacy, the first time for a -4, the second time for a -2, and the third time for just 2 yards.
Yeah, that was directly after that last interception. That was after that last interception.
Exactly.
And that was inexcusable.
And that was when it became apparent to me, and you could almost feel, despite the fact that that particular time, Green Bay was still up at that time by 12 points, you could almost feel, and there's only 5 minutes remaining in the game, you go, oh, no, I have a gut feeling this thing is going to change. You could almost feel it right in your stomach that this was going to change. To run that series of plays the way that they did, so lackadaisically, I thought was absolutely reprehensible.
You know, I'm surprised we're not hearing any conspiracy theorists on this, that there was some kind of predetermined, let's let the Seahawks defend their title kind of thing. Because if you look at the progression of them last 5 minutes, there was a couple of plays in there that you just don't see. I mean, the onside kick went perfectly for Seattle. The two-point conversion was a wing and a prayer that got answered just to get to the point of having a three-point lead after the touchdown, which Marshawn Lynch walked 25 yards essentially untouched.
Yep.
I mean, that's been their only offense all game was Marshawn Lynch. How does he get a 25-yard touchdown run at the end of a game like that, almost untouched to the point where he's grabbing his crotch, walking in the end zone at the team? I mean, that's just it's inexcusable. I mean, it does boggle one's mind. I mean, to me, that should raise more questions than the pressure of the football.
Well,
to be honest,
it seems to me as well that, and I don't have the splits. I'd like to see I don't have the stats by splits. I'd like to see it by quarter. But it seems to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, but Marshawn Lynch's numbers didn't get so heavily inflated until the second half. In other
words,
when we start talking about...
Yeah, he was nothing in the first half.
Exactly.
You're right.
Green Bay, they played both sides of the ball and played it very, very well in the first half.
And the third quarter for the most part, but then they got soft. They decided to play. It was almost like when you see a team play prevent defense, except they were doing it on both sides of the ball. You know, it's like not only are we gonna play back and give you the little gimme passes. No. We're going to give it to you on offense. We're going to run our guy into the line three times and punt to you right away. I mean, that's just, the whole point of that is to burn time off the clock. They didn't burn any time off the clock, hardly. Seattle didn't have an issue. Matter of fact, Green Bay even had time to go back and tie the game at the end with a field goal, which was, I don't know. I just didn't like the way the feel of the whole game. And McCarthy really needs to look deep within himself because he cost this team the game, in my opinion. I think Aaron Rodgers even more or less said so much without saying it in those words. You know, we were the better team today and we lost, was his comment at the end. You know, well, why do you lose if you're the better team? Well, we got out-coached.
And Uncle Mark over in our chat room pointing out, and I just want to check because I've missed a couple other comments, but I want to point out, we're talking about the aggressiveness of this, or lack thereof, lack of aggressiveness from the Green Bay Packers in the second half, particularly in the fourth quarter. And Uncle Mark points out, hey, one could say there was a bit of lack of aggressiveness even in the first half. I mean, when you
take a
look at twice, not once, but twice, fourth and goal from the one, and they go for the field goal.
He has a great point.
Listen, the first time, I didn't have a problem with it. The first time, all right, go for the field goal. Second time, I might agree. All right, at that point, look, you've got points on the board. You might as well take the chance. Look, I understand the concept of, and you know me, and you hear me right here at Frat House Sports, every single day, but and twice on Sundays. I'm a conservative guy, particularly when it comes to the playoffs. My attitude is put the points on the board. I'm frequently at odds with coaches that want to take the chance on fourth down. But there are times where you can get away with it. And I thought, in particular, the second time that they were there, they could have gotten away with it there, because at that point, it's almost like a wash. You understand what I'm saying?
Well, not only that, Seahawks couldn't do anything on offense. Not until, you know, midway through the third quarter, after they had the fake field goal that became a touchdown that kind of charged them up, did they even do anything on offense. They were so outmanned, they couldn't do anything right. Russell Wilson threw four interceptions in this game,
four.
And they still won.
Four.
How does that happen?
Yeah.
It just doesn't, you know? I mean, McCarthy, by not being aggressive, even in those, you know, early games, if they would have went for a fourth and one at the 1 foot line where they were, okay, what's Seattle going to do? I mean, all he did was throw, you know, interception after interception. Anyway, you're going to end up with great field position, even if you don't score. That's a great point, Uncle Mark. He did play that the whole game pretty conservatively, and I think he should probably look at that in the off season and say, hey, maybe I need to crank this up a little bit. Maybe
well,
I can't. Be so conservative.
It's kind of a shame, because I read some of the same comments you did. It's kind of a shame in some respects to hear an Aaron Rodgers take the heat, you know, take the weight of it all on his shoulders, I guess as he did yesterday after the game and even today, where he made the comment saying, hey, look, you know, this is a game we should have won. That's on me. I lost the game. You know, really, when it comes right down to it, that's Aaron Rodgers being a tremendous soldier.
Oh, absolutely.
And taking it for really what was absolutely apparent to any smart football viewer, any smart football follower, as you watched that game, that was not Aaron Rodgers' fault. That was just damn poor decision-making.
Oh, absolutely. I think this should be all put at the feet of McCarthy, and that's the long and short of it. I mean, if I was a Packers fan, I'd be furious right now. I mean, yeah, he's been a good coach. They've won Super Bowl. They won a Super Bowl with him. So, yeah, okay, maybe he gets this as a pass. But he got to change, you know, something moving forward. You cannot call a game so passively like that. I mean, his own locker room has got to be saying to him, hey, we need to take a chance here and there. I got to think. You know, Aaron Rodgers is not going to sit there and not say something. If he isn't, maybe he should be a little more adamant about his feelings. And, you know, same on, you know, some other guys on that team. They need to tell him, hey, we need to be a little more aggressive here. We can't just kick these field goals like this and, you know, get beaten at the end of the game.
Well, and forget the players on the field. What about assistant coaches? What about other coaches on the field? What about an OC? What about a guy up in the box that's watching it and going, hey, coach, huh?
Well, I do get the impression, though, and this is a good thing, McCarthy's in charge. When you watch him on the sidelines, he's clearly in charge.
Yep.
Yeah, so he's making the calls. So I can understand a subordinate coach not wanting to question him, especially in the flow of the game, maybe after the game or at halftime, you know, that's the time to maybe say something like that. You know, I don't know about it during the game, but you know, yeah, clearly after in the aftermath, yes. And I generally do not fault the coach for that, because I think that's the way it should be. You should have one voice, one guy in charge saying, yeah, this is what we're doing. And I think that works well for most coaches who do that. It's just his calls were just too conservative across the board. And I think that's where, okay, maybe you need somebody who can kick you in the pants when you need it, be it a player, be it, you know, an Aaron Rodgers, be it a Clay Matthews, be it a, you know, another coach. You know, it may not be the way you run your ship, but you might have to be open to that kind of thing, you know, moving forward, because I'll tell you that's a shame. I mean, an absolute shame that the Packers are not in the Super Bowl. They should have been.
Yep, yep. You know, I don't know what's worse. Uncle Mark points out in the chat room that apparently there was a defensive lineman that was quoted saying today that he would have rather the team not even made the playoffs, let alone lose like that. Now, you know, I guess in some respects, you know, there's losing the way Green Bay did, and then there's losing the way Indianapolis did. And you got to sit back in some respects and go, well, which really was worse? Was it worse to lose the way Green Bay did, where you're up, what was it, 16-0 at the half, and you just completely collapse, or to get blown out as badly as the Colts did?
I would think the Packers are feeling a lot worse. I mean, think of their fans. I mean, we heard some stories about Seahawks fans who left early who were trying to get back in a game. How many Packers
for them.
Fans?
I'm glad they didn't get back in.
How many Packers fans do you think were out there looking for, hey, maybe I can get some Super Bowl tickets on StubHub or something? And you know, how many of them were already kind of making tentative plans to, you know, for 2 weeks from now, and then to have all that go away just because, you know, your coach decided to, you know, play flag football, I guess, for the fourth quarter? I don't know what he was doing. There's no rhyme or reason to it.
All due respect to those Seattle fans that walked the hell out of the game at halftime or in the third quarter, for you people to sit there and call yourselves the 12th man, you're a stinking fraud. You're a fraud. You got me? I hope
they,
you know.
You
and listen,
what?
If you were one of those that were in the frickin' parking lot and couldn't get back in, I dare you to call me out. Call me up. Call me out. 347-826-9964. You're a fraud. Call yourself the 12th man, and you walk the hell out on the game.
I don't think it was that many people, to be honest with you, though, because if you looked at that game, it was pretty loud even at the end of that game, and you didn't see many empty seats. I don't think it was a mass exodus like Uncle Mark was looking for during the game. He was hoping to see them walk out with their tail between their legs, leaving early to beat traffic. But I don't think we ever got the mass exodus. But, yeah, the few who did, yeah, they had no room to complain.
There were articles about it today, of course. Folks complaining they couldn't get back in. Well, you know something? You walk the hell out, you void your right to get back in. That's my attitude.
Well, that's a known thing. You can't leave any sporting event and go back. I mean, there's no professional football game allows readmission ever. And you know, that's the way it is because they don't have the you know, they can't absorb extra, you know, ticket passing, et cetera, et cetera. That's why they don't allow you back in. You know, you're not going to go out there and give your tickets to somebody else. And, you know, they just can't allow it. So
I think it's more, too, that they're concerned about contraband. You're going to leave the stadium.
Yeah.
You're going to get contraband, bring it back in. You know, God knows what it could be. You know what I mean? It could be anything.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. There's many. Yeah, it's a known fact you don't do that. If you leave, you're done. I mean, they have a big sign over the entryways, too. I mean, you, on your way out, you leave, you can't get back in. So, no,
right,
I have no sympathy. None.
We got just a couple of minutes left, and we've had a tremendous program. We were joined earlier this evening by Kent Sterling from 1430 AM out there in Indianapolis, and tremendous breakdown from him on great comments, too, coming from an Indianapolis Colts fan on exactly how he felt about yesterday's AFC game between the Colts and the Patriots. But one more quick little thing I want to just jump in to you with, Brandon. Looking at this game yesterday, particularly the NFC game between Green Bay and the Seahawks, not a tremendous performance by either one of these quarterbacks, Aaron Rodgers or Russell Wilson. But let's look at Wilson for a moment. 14-29 for 209 yards. One touchdown, and as you pointed out, four interceptions, and ended up with a QB rating of 44.3. Now, we were talking here near the end of the AFC Championship game, and it was looking, obviously, like it was going to be a New England dominated game. We were talking about this matchup between Seattle and New England. And where it was going to stand from the standpoint of, what's the betting line going to be? And I came out and I said, oh, come on. This thing's going to be close as hell, if not in favor of, I think I might have even said in favor of New England. And when we looked it up, no. It was in favor of Seattle, 2.5 points. But apparently just as quickly as that line was posted, it came back to being a pick 'em. And yet, when you take a look at the quarterback performance of Wilson from yesterday, I'm even questioning whether a pick'em is correct. Any thoughts?
Well, here's what it is. If you look back prior to the games last week, they actually did a mock line of what all four possible matchups would have been. Okay, and Seattle was the favorite against either New England or the Colts. The Patriots and Packers was actually a pick 'em, and the Packers against the Colts, the Packers would have been favored. So, okay, they already knew what the lines were going to be roughly. But then you had a blowout from the Patriots side. So, of course, that's what's the last thing everybody saw. It's going to stick in their mind. You see it as a better, you see this line, you're throwing all your money on the Patriots. It's already moved to a pick 'em just to get the money going even on both sides. That's the way it's got to be for the casinos and the bookies out there. They need to have even money on both sides to make money. So, you know, that's how you explain how it moved right away. On paper, pre matchup, you know, I think Seattle's defense is what gets them all the lines in their favor. I don't think it's so much Russell Wilson. They don't look at the lines there on those games are not based on the offense. They're based on the defense and the defense's ability to shut the other side down. And, you know, from take it full circle, you know, the offense will do just enough to win the game, which is what they did against the Packers. I mean, because clearly that Seattle offense was horrible. I mean, yeah, Marshawn Lynch's ending numbers look great, but he was not a non-factor for three quarters of that game, essentially. You know, that's where it's all coming from. It's all based on Seattle's defense, which is, you know, the number one defense in the league, probably going against, I don't know statistically if the Patriots are number one, but the way they performed yesterday, they darn well should be. So you got a great offense going against a great defense and a decent defense going against a so-so offense. So I think it should be a good Super Bowl.
I do, too. I do as well.
I mean, nobody's really run against Seattle, and that's what New England did all against the Colts. So, you know, Belichick will probably come out throwing the ball.
At the same time, though, you had to be somewhat pleased with the running game of your New England Patriots yesterday. What was it, 177 yards, I believe, on the ground? A lot of that from LeGarrette Blount.
Mostly LeGarrette Blount, yeah. Shane Vereen was mixed in there, had a couple catches out of the backfield like he always does.
Wouldn't you think, though, that Belichick and the Patriots are going to bring a balanced game as they showed yesterday to the Super Bowl?
Go back a week. What did they do against the Broncos? They had, what, 13 carries for 14 yards or something ridiculous?
Who would have thought they would come out with 177 yesterday?
But I think he'll do whatever his game plan will call for. In other words, whatever he thinks will be successful against Seattle, that's what he's going to do. And I think I don't think I've seen Seattle give up a lot of yards to anyone throughout the season. So I don't know that running is going to be I think his game plan is going to be a lot different against this team. It's going to be more like the game plan against the Broncos, because the Broncos was more a pass heavy, you know, game plan. And that worked too. I mean, I'm biased because this is why Belichick is what he is. I mean, he can do whatever's called for that he feels is the right way to go. He's generally right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he does play to his team's strength and player's strength. I mean that pass from Edelman to Amendola last week against the Broncos, who even remotely saw that coming? I mean, that came out of nowhere, and that was just like a beautiful play at the right time. I mean, you might see something like that in the Super Bowl. Who knows who it's going to be?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'd like to see Gronk more involved. I thought Gronk was totally uninvolved yesterday in that game, and I was a little disappointed in that. Clearly, he wanted to run the ball, and that's what they did.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Gronk did have a few early drops, and, you know, he wasn't maybe playing his best game early on, and he did catch a touchdown, but he was not the Gronk that you're used to seeing. I mean, I think we saw one play where he caught the ball and ran through a couple people. Other than that, he really was a non-factor in the game. And that could be, you know, maybe the Colts were game planning to take him out. That could be, but we'll see. I think this next week, the Super Bowl is going to be a fun matchup.
I think you got
two strengths going against each other between Patriots offense against the Seattle defense.
Gronkowski was targeted yesterday 8 times and ended up with 3 receptions. So
Yeah. He could have a few early drops. I'm not gonna, you know.
Oh no, no,
he's not gonna be Superman on every game. I understand that.
Sure.
But
sure.
It seemed like to me early on though that he was not involved. I mean, the couple plays he did get early where he did have a drop, you know, it just didn't seem like he got. I'm guessing of those eight targets, six of them probably came in the second half. That's because I know he didn't have a catch in the first half. He didn't have his first catch till the second half.
Well, he ended up with three receptions, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Three. All right. Let me wrap it up here for this evening's Red Zone Blitz program, another tremendous program. And as I pointed out, what a hell of a week it has started out being just about a week ago here on the Frat House Sports Radio Network, and we're going to continue it right through this week. And well, I'm going to tell you, I mean, you know, Brandon and I are already just beginning to talk Super Bowl. You can bet we're going to be talking Super Bowl for the next 2 weeks right here on the Frat House Sports Radio Network. So make sure you're tuning into all of our programs. Our next one will be, oh gosh, I hope you all don't get, withrawal, but it's not going to be until Thursday. Yeah. Listen, I might get withdrawal not doing one because it seems like I've been doing one every day for the past, 3-4 days. But we will be back with you on Thursday for our flagship program, the Frat House Sports Show. And that will be, I believe it's going to be our 176th. Let me just check our calendar here. Yes, that'll be our 176th program coming to you here on Thursday evening at 7 p.m. Eastern time. Make sure you're here for that one. And then I will be back here with you as well on Saturday for our Frat House Saturday program at 2 p.m. Eastern time.
Right. Well, hey, you know what, though? Not only do we have all these shows, but we're getting back to our roots this weekend, and we're filming a video again,
yes,
which is
will.
Nice. We haven't done that in a while because of circumstances that really were kind of out of our control and stuff like that. But we're going to get a video in the can again here and, you know, put one up on YouTube that you'll hear on this network, but you'll also
yes.
be able to see it if you want to see it. Which...
Absolutely, and that'll be our semi-annual roundtable. End of our NFL end-of-season roundtable program will be shot next Sunday and will air right here on this network on January 29th, actually. That'll be in our Frat House Sports Show number 177. So that'll be coming up there on January 29th, which will be a week from Thursday. We've got a busy, busy agenda for the next couple of weeks.
We got to do one of these next week, right, in between, even though we don't have any games.
Oh, absolutely we will be. No, we will be back here.
We can get another, other guests in here. Like, this was a fun show. Kent was a great, great guest.
Was tremendous, and thank you. Many shout-outs to Kent Sterling from 1430 AM in Indianapolis, CBS Sports. Listen, you can follow Kent. He pointed out he's over on Twitter. And listen to him 3 o'clock to 6 o'clock every afternoon on 1430. Easy enough to do. You might sit there and go, hey, I'm not in the Indianapolis market. Doesn't matter. If you've got a computer, www.cbssports1430.com, and do exactly as I did today and just pick up the live stream and you can hear it. He was great. It was a lot of fun to listen to him today. And I was tweeting back and forth with him today during the program and what have you. And you can do that. And that was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Hey, all of our listeners, you got to listen to the Red Zone Blitz next week. We'll give you the latest update on Deflategate. You can't miss it.
Yeah, there you go. I like the promo. Yeah. Listen, I'm going to have to carve that one out and set that one aside. We'll put that one and make that a commercial. All right, everybody, thank you for joining us here. And make sure you're here with us on Thursday evening for our regular Frat House Sports Show, 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Thanks for tuning in.